Welcome back to Extension 720 here on 720 WGN. I'm Justin Kaufman. Well, I was reading a story today. This is interesting that some security experts are saying that one of the most underreported story in the world right now is what's happening in Iraq. I was looking at this story and I read this whole article today about how the people of Iraq are rising up on the elitist, what they call the elitist government. There's over 300 people have been killed. And there's questions about whether or not the government is able to handle this. There's a lot of there's worry. But the security expert that was in this article was saying that this has implications because Iran could get involved. The U.S. would have to come back to Iraq and play a big role. This is exactly what in 2003 one of the issues was the fact that Saddam Hussein was killing his own people. And here we are with a protest. And it looks like the Iraqi government's doing the same thing. Anyway, the reason I bring it up is I thought about the convo we had back in September with Alex Poppy. Now, Alex is a novelist, and she came in to talk about her book, Moxie. It was a great book, and we had a good conversation about it. And she's from the Chicago area, but her day job, what she does is she's a teacher. She's a teacher at the American University in Iraq, in northern Iraq. At the end of that interview, we talked for a couple minutes just about what life was like and what was happening there. And she kind of talked a little bit about these issues that were bubbling up. And I thought it'd be great to try and get a hold of her and see if we could talk to her tonight on Extension 720 and the wonders of technology and Skype. She is on the line with us, Alex Poppy from Northern Iraq. Alex, thanks for joining us.
Justin, thank you so much for having me.
It's great to talk to you again. And, you know, I'm one of these, I think, Americans that is not paying that much attention to what's happening in the Middle East beyond what's happening in Syria or what's being on the front page of the Washington Post. But this issue about protests in Iraq, this is a really big deal.
It is. It's in one way, it's really hopeful because it's a youth-led movement and it's been going on since October 1st. I had been down in Baghdad on the September 31st recruiting for the university and left, you know, hours prior to the protest starting and the city was calm and peaceful and everything was fine. And then next morning we woke up to protests and then chaos that's been going on and it's been getting increasingly violent. But what I think is missed or unrepresented in the American mainstream media is this idea that it's like one force that is targeting protesters. The reality of it is, or what people are talking about up here, is that there is fragmentation among who's cracking down on protesters, but ultimately there's collusion in this idea that they want to silence them. But I don't think that you can say that it's only the Iraqi government or it's only Iranian.
Right. It could be all other players. It could be state-sponsored. It could be Iranian-sponsored. There could be other people. But there seems to be this desire to instigate and to cause chaos.
Yeah, it definitely is. And it's targeting now the shift has gone, you know, it started October 1st. They had 2 weeks of protests. And at first they were protesting lack of jobs, lack of fundamental necessities like access to clean water, electricity, et cetera. But now it's moved on to a desire October 25th. So during the Shia holidays, there was a respite on protesting, and then October 25th, there was a big mobilization to re-protest again. And then the call came for the entire government to step down, and then to the end of Iranian influence. They don't want to see Americans step in. It's against all kind of all proxy influences, and that would be Israel, United States, Saudi Arabia, Iran, Turkey, Syria. So people kind of want to let Iraqis kind of govern themselves, but they want to have an end to the corruption that's in the government right now. And now it's being, I guess, rebranded, according to some news media outlets, as instead of like getting rid of corruption and overall corruption, they call it a quota system. But it's really corruption. Mm-hmm. It's this idea that, you know, jobs and contracts are awarded to friends or based on what's called here WASTA, you know, your last name and who you know, as right. opposed to merits, and just a fundamental lack of economic hope because there's not a lot of jobs. And it's an incredibly rich oil country that has limited basic services of water, electricity, access to education, access to health care, and economic mobility. The nature of the protest has shifted recently in the last 2 weeks to targeting specifically females and medics, which is, you know, curious because a lot of females, the idea that you're targeting them at night is playing into the patriarchy of the society and the culture to keep women at home at night. And there was a lot of protest. There was some news outlets are quoting her as a voluntary doctor and some of them are saying paramedic. Saba al-Matawi, she's an activist and medical personnel, and she was taken like 4 or 5 days ago, and there was a large outcry on social media, and so she was released yesterday, along with a journalist, Hisham Ali. But other activists are still missing, and they seem to be targeted toward women. So women are being taken at night as a way to keep them off the streets. Mary Mohammed is an activist that was taken on November 10th, and people are wondering where she is. And so Amnesty International, these statistics come from Amnesty International and Human Rights Watch, talking about people that are being taken by non-state armed groups. So they are non-state armed groups. There is, again, this disintegration and then collusion at the end, because they, the ruling elite, have an interest in keeping their power. Young people are hopeful. I mean, you have this protest that I don't think 10 years ago you might not have seen. So the idea that there are protests is hopeful in a place, you know, that was so wracked by violence, sectarian violence, 10 years ago.
Can I ask just about, for the Americans' understanding of the area, and we know about the war in Iraq, and we know that in 2003, for face value reasons, not necessarily what the arguments and the theories are for why we went there, but there was this idea that Saddam Hussein was had weapons of mass destruction and that he would be willing to use them on his own people. When we get to this point where we're 15 years removed and it's different generations, is that what we're seeing here? I mean, are we seeing the elite government kind of falling into the same kind of ruling ideal that was done before the war? I mean, is it just the same kind of thing happening again?
No, I don't think you can blame it on the central government. I think that, again, it's this disintegration and collusion. So, you know, it's armed militia, Iraqi government backed forces, but not specifically the central government. I think there is sort of this dissolution of a centralized power. Seeing that security forces are the ones being credited, for lack of a better word, for firing on protesters. And it's not really clear who those security forces are reporting to. You have the Iranian-backed militia, the PMUs that were instrumental in helping fight ISIS, and they are kind of still around, but they're not the only ones. And so I have noticed, like Human Rights Watch, the terminology in the media that is reporting, it's careful to say security forces, government-backed forces, without pointing a finger at a specific person.
Right.
I don't think that you can point a finger at a specific person.
Yeah, so there's a lot of rogue forces that are happening here. Right? Let me do this. I'm going to take a quick break, and I'll come back, and we'll talk more. Alex Poppy's joining us from Iraq. She teaches at American University of Iraq, talking about the protests that are happening there, and I would say the instability of the Middle East in general. She is a novelist. We had her on the program. She's from the Chicago area, her novel Moxie, but we talked about life living in Iraq. And she's joining us tonight, so stay with us. Alex Poppy is on a line with me on Extension 720. She is a novelist from the Chicago area who lives in northern Iraq. She teaches at American University of Iraq. When she was in town, what was it, Pete, like maybe September, we were talking a little bit about some of the issues that were happening in Iraq. And just in the last month or so, there have been youth-led protests that some are saying is one of the most underreported stories in the world. Alex, I have to ask you just about, you know, we hear a lot about what's happening with the Turkish forces and the Americans, you know, stepping to the side in Syria, talking about sort of taking on the Kurds there, and not to mention the fight right now in Israel. How much of that just leads to all of this, the unstable instability of the region, that all of this is happening at once?
I'm glad that you brought that up, because it's something that's also really underreported, is not just the fighting in northern Syria, but that the Turkish-backed militia are now attacking the Yazidis in Sinjar. And for people who may not be aware, the Yazidis are an ethno-religious group that were targeted, really bad genocide in 2014 by ISIS. They attacked Sinjar Mountain. They stole the girls and women and young girls and enslaved them. 3,000 Yazidi women are still missing from some reports. And now to know that Turkish-backed forces are bombing Yazidi hospitals and military militia posts around Sinjar is heartbreaking. They have not recovered from ISIS's attacks. And Turkey is now attacking them again, and most of the world doesn't really know about it.
Why is Turkey attacking that part? Because we're very aware of the Kurdish forces that helped eradicate ISIS in Syria, but why is that happening?
Turkey claims that its reason for justification for bombing in Sinjar is that they're going after what they consider to be the PKK and Kurdish fighting forces, that they consider to be a state designated terrorist group. And the U.S. does also recognize the PKK as a terrorist group. But the broad definition of the PKK when it's targeting people, for example, they include the YPG and the YPJ, and the YPG and the YPJ are the part of the forces that made up the Syrian Defense Forces that fought alongside the U.S. soldiers against ISIS in northern Syria and the Rojava region. And so it's hard to separate. And about, 3-4 weeks ago, Turkey used a drone outside of Suleimani at a place called Asmar Mountain, which is, you know, a place where tourists go to, like, have a picnic around sunset. And around 5 p.m. in the evening, they targeted what they considered to be two PKK fighters and killed them with a drone, you know, in the middle of this tourist area. And some people, you know, speculate, was there complicity with government, with the government allowing that or not? And, you know, we don't know, but it is unusual that it would have happened, you know, at that time in this very civilized kind of non-war zone. And so they call them PKK fighters, and other people are calling them members of, I think it's called the CKC, which is a different organization of Syrian fighters that the PKK falls under. So you have these umbrellas of fighting organizations that overlap. And so, you know, sometimes the U.S. was arming and training the YPG and the YPJ at the same time that Turkey was calling them PKK and fighting against them in Rojava.
That's part of the problem, too, right? Yeah, that's part of the problem that there are a lot of complicated relationships. When this protest is happening in Iraq, and you have the invasion of northern Syria and the efforts in Turkey to take on their nemesis, the PKK, the terrorism group, what does that do for everybody's, not just stability, but, you know, when you're teaching kids and talking to people in that region, do you sense, I don't want to trivialize it with morale, but like a sense of despair, a sense of that this is bigger than just the normal kind of wear and tear of the Middle East?
You know, what keeps me in this region is that the kids here, there's just a sweetness in the region. And it's not just Kurdish or Iraqi, it's the entire region. There's just this innate sweetness, and I've taught in 8-9 countries, and I think students are great everywhere. I think it's the institutions around them that succeed or fail, but there is an inherent sweetness here. And these kids have known nothing but conflict through their young lives, and so they get on with it. They are distracted, and they are sometimes troubled. You know, you can see it in their eyes. They're not focused, but they don't outwardly talk about it, and they don't use it as an excuse for why they can't concentrate or something. They're very resilient, and I admire their ability to soldier on when they're, you know, they're worried about their loved ones. I have a lot of kids this semester in particular from the South, and I know that they're worried about their family and friends in Basra, Baghdad, et cetera. But, you know, they continue to try. They are often the ones informing us before we see it in the news, you know. They are the best ones to report sometimes.
I feel, you know, sometimes I feel ignorant even talking about this stuff because I don't know it. But do you feel any sort of worry about your safety being in a region that is tumultuous, especially when it comes to the protests as it is now?
No. There's issues in the cabs like lately. People have been like, oh, where are you from? And I'm amazed that people can differentiate between the current political administration and the citizens of that country. And so they may not approve of or appreciate the decisions that President Trump has made, but they're not blanketing it across all Americans, which I appreciate. I really am not a supporter of weaponizing, you know, minority discourse in terms of who's suffering more in this region, you know, especially under ISIS and post-ISIS. It's Yazidis, Christians, or Muslims. And the reality of it is that most of ISIS's victims were Muslims. But that was something that our president administration had used as a reason to join with the YPG, et cetera, to target ISIS because they were targeting Yazidis and Christians. And now it seems like we are turning our back and letting Turkish-backed forces target Yazidis and Christians. And the hypocrisy there is not lost.
Again, the complex nature of the relationships. Alex Poppy is teaching at American University of Iraq in northern Iraq. She is an author. She wrote a book called Moxie, and she was a guest of ours on Extension 720. And halfway through the convo, we just started talking about Iraq and the kids there, and a lot of your students know nothing but conflict, like you said. I can't thank you enough for hopping on Skype and being our guest tonight here on Extension 720 in Chicago. I appreciate it, Alex.
Thank you so much, Justin. Great to talk to you again.